From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 377, recorded live Thursday, June 27th, 2013. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, makers of GesturePack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft's Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Mads Christensen about his newly open-sourced Web Essentials.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'm actually down here in San Francisco at Build. The sounds of sirens behind me. No doubt some Windows machine somewhere is having trouble, and they've called the police. And I've got Mads Christensen here. We're actually hanging out in my hotel room. We got the keynote is done, day one, day two, and you presented at Build.
I did, yes.
What did you show?
I showed a lot of the new cool stuff that came in Visual Studio 2013 for web developers. So a lot of new HTML capabilities, JavaScript, and BrowserLink.
Yeah.
Codename Artery.
Now, I like the name Artery better than that.
Yeah, I know.
But there's two things you're working on that are really cool. And I think BrowserLink is one. We'll talk about that a little bit. And then Web Essentials, which is kind of a side gig for you. It's actually not, you know, I wouldn't say it's sanctioned, but it's still your thing, right? You own it.
Yes. I'm the only developer on it, basically.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that first, actually, because Web Essentials is kind of this extension that you plug into 2012 or 2013. I think there was a version for 2010 as well.
There is. The original version came out for 2010, but it's not as feature-rich. It came in pretty late, and then we started working on 2012, and I kind of just went ahead and worked on the version for 2012 early on. So the 2010 version does have a lot of features. But not nearly as much as many as 2012.
How many people have downloaded Web Essentials now?
We're probably pushing 500,000.
Yeah, it's almost a half million. Yeah. It's almost become, I think, for front-end web developers on the .NET platform to be like essential. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that it is. Why isn't it included out of the box?
Well, a lot of the features actually now are included out of the box. But they started in Web Essentials because that's just, it's a playground. It's where we test ideas and iterate over possible solutions to problems that we all have, all front-end developers have. So sometimes we don't actually get things right. Sometimes we know what a problem is, but we might realize that there are several solutions. And so we test them out. And we actually then measure like what works, what doesn't work. And when we think we got it, then we're going to move it in. So it's basically just a testing ground. And it's also a way for people to get their hands on features way earlier than normal.
Right.
Because they start there. It's basically part of our specification planning process, if you want, right? So you get really early access to a lot of features.
Yeah, I kind of reminds me of, I use Gmail for my internet mail, and there's a feature in Gmail called Labs, and it's just random stuff. And like some of it might be, you know, embed YouTube videos, and other ones might be like change the way this button looks. And I think what they're doing is that they're voting, and they're basically seeing how many people want that feature and how many people use that feature. And then every year or so, they'll graduate individual features into the main product. So then like send an archive was a feature, and it moved into the main product. Are there things that are in Labs that have shown up in 2012?
There is. For instance, Less and CoffeeScript.
Less.
Less and CoffeeScript started in Web Essentials. So did syntax highlighting for Mustache and Handlebars. And even PasteJSON as classes actually started there.
And Mustache and Handlebars, again, are not just funny nouns, but are the names of templating engines.
Yeah, they're actual things, yes.
Yeah, they're real things, for those that may not know.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you use Ember.js, for instance, then you're using Handlebars probably for your templating. So we now have nice syntax highlighting. But all that started just as prototypes and experiments in Web Essentials.
Now, for me, I don't like running extensions in Visual Studio because I'm afraid that it destabilizes Visual Studio. I don't know if that's historical, maybe the old way that they used to do that, but I haven't had that many problems with Web Essentials like crash and stuff.
No.
Why? Does that mean that you're a better programmer than the other people, or is it something about the way you wrote it?
I hear from a lot of people the same concerns. And I actually also have them, not with Visual Studio anymore, but For instance, with browsers, kind of, we know that if you have a lot of plugins for your browsers, it slows everything down, and we think that, well, it must be the same then for Visual Studio. But actually, the way you hook things up in Visual Studio, that's not the case. For instance, you don't load a particular extension for CSS, for instance, unless you open a CSS file. So I guess the nature is just different.
So you're saying that if I load Visual Studio and Web Essentials, Web Essentials doesn't actually even load it when I'm sitting there, file, new project.
Well, Web Essentials actually does load it because it does some things, but it does it in a non-blocking way. And the heavy lifting of everything that Web Essentials does, it doesn't do on solution load or when you open Visual Studio. Actually, Web Essentials doesn't run at all when you just open Visual Studio. When you open a solution, that's when it kicks in.
Okay.
But it doesn't really do much. It just registers some commands. And then after that, then you have to invoke those commands. You have to be in the CSS editor, for instance, for those commands to be loaded.
Now, editing, changing the way the editor behaves, the two main extensions that I think of when I think of changing how an editor behaves are CodeRush and ReSharper.
Yes.
And they do, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff. They're painting over the top and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When did extending the editors in Visual Studio become less scary and evil? Because you seem to be able to, I mean, you and I will have conversations late at night, and the next day you've gone and you've done the thing.
Yeah.
And you've extended the editor in some weird way.
I don't know if it has gotten that much easier. I think the initial hurdle that you have to kind of understand what's going on and understand the MEF structure of
MEF, the Managed Extensibility Framework.
Yeah. How you can kind of inject your own code into Visual Studio. You have to kind of understand how that works. It took me probably 6 months to kind of understand it. But when you then get it and you already have code that does similar things, it's really, really simple if you're just to copy and modify.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, that's what I do most of the time.
I see. So what you're saying is that there's things where that you might want to expand or hover over or identify a piece of information within some CSS. And now that you've figured out where that lives in memory, going and changing the color of something or putting a tooltip over something is not a big deal anymore.
It's not a big deal. There's actually some good samples out there. You have to kind of know where to look, and it's not that obvious all the time. But there's code out there, and you can just search for it, and that's what I did. A lot of people think that, well, I work at Microsoft, so I have direct access to those teams that build the different things in Visual Studio, and that's why I'm able to do this. That's not true.
So you're not using any undocumented.
I'm not like going over to some other team in Visual Studio and asking them how to do certain things. It's all stuff I found online, or I discover interfaces or something like that that's in that I can just see, like, that's in the extensibility project.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say file new extensibility project, the SDK lays down a lot of templates and DLL files that you can use, and I just discover them there, basically.
Okay. Yep. So the thing that I think that Web Essentials is most known for is taking the CSS editor and just making it better. Because I remember seeing a presentation that you gave to the team that had some like bar charts, and it was showing kind of like from 0 to 100, and it was like, here's how good our CSS editor is. And in 2010, it was like, we're doing 30% of what we could do. And in 2012, we're doing, I don't know, I'm just making numbers up, 60% of what we're doing. And then you said, but if we just push a little harder, we could do like 98% or 100%.
Yeah.
And then, you know, sometimes people believe you and sometimes they don't. And then sometimes you just go and do it. And that's one of the things that is a good way to get things done at Microsoft is to just simply do it.
Just do it, yeah.
And then go back later and show your boss that you did it.
Yeah.
You just went off basically and said, you know, I don't care what those guys say. I know what our CSS editor can do. And you basically just went and did it.
Yeah, well, it came from, it started out being my way of testing the CSS editor. So in 2012, we built a brand new one. And so we threw everything out that was the old editor, which was the same editor that we've used always in Visual Studio. And we replaced it with a new one that had full extensibility. And our way of testing that extensibility model and making sure that the API was as flexible as possible was to actually build extensions. So that's how it all started. So it just started as me actually testing what a developer was coding. And
so the CSS editor in 2012... Mm-hmm. Even though it's, you know, it's text, right? It doesn't look any different than anything else. It's completely rewritten.
Completely. All managed code, all very nicely done.
And compared to 2010.
Compared to 2010 and everything before it. It has a really nice API, probably the nicest API of all the editors, at least to my knowledge. And now we're doing the same thing with HTML, which is very exciting too.
So in 2013, which they announced a couple days ago, the exact same thing has been done to the HTML editor.
Yes.
So the Razor editor, all that stuff completely rewritten.
completely rewritten from scratch. And the extensibility model is the same. The concepts are the same as CSS. So now we're going to have a more similar and familiar story. If so, mm-hmm. if you've ever done any extensibility on CSS, transferring that knowledge to HTML is pretty easy, actually.
One of the things that I showed in the keynote, and I kind of snuck it in there, as I'm showing your stuff, right? Yeah, which is, you know, it's kind of cool, is hovering over a CSS rule and then having real-world browser versions and saying, okay, this version of Opera and this version of Firefox, yes. et cetera, et cetera. Where, is it, are you loading that from a database, or how do you know stuff?
That's actually pretty funny because that was in the box in 2012. That was not something that we loaded later on. It is the
knowledge or at the tooltip?
The knowledge. The tooltip came with Web Essentials, but the knowledge of the browsers came in the box.
Oh,
we just never did anything with it.
Wait a second. So I know that in 2012, is it in 2010 or 2012? It'll give me squigglies and tell me if I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing. But it's not doing it. It'll tell me like, oh, that's not CSS 3, that's CSS
2.1. Oh, yeah, that was 2010.
Okay.
Yeah. That's when we did the web standards update.
Right, right. But you're saying that it knows that Transform works, 3D Transform works on IE10?
Yeah.
And it just doesn't do anything with it?
Correct.
Where is it? It's like in a database somewhere? That's a crime.
Well, no, all the, just like with XML actually, oh, sorry, with the HTML editor, all the schema files that make up the intelligence and validation of CSS actually is just XML files somewhere within Visual Studio mm-hmm. install directory, program files,
big
Visual
chunk
Studio
of metadata. Yeah.
It's actually very nicely structured, so you have one XML file per CSS3 module. So mm-hmm. it's really easy to navigate around in. And
by CSS module, you mean?
I mean the actual CSS module by the W3C.
Okay.
So you putting have a that transform terms, module, yeah. you have a you know, backgrounds and borders,
animations,
and so on. Yeah. The text module. I think there's like 40 of them.
Right. Nicely structured.
Very nicely structured. Very easy to see how to work. I wrote a blog post a while back on how to actually add new schemas, and I had an example how to add KHTML, which is the old WebKit vendor prefix.
So you're saying that if a new CSS module came out, theoretically, you could add that to Visual Studio and Web Essentials and not have to recompile anything.
That's exactly what Web Essentials actually does. I have every 3 days, Web Essentials will see if there is an update to the schemas, and they will just download the new XML files.
You're kidding. Where are you looking for that?
Online on realworldvalidator.com.
And what is realworldvalidator.com? See, now you're just leading me down the primrose path.
This is, I do have analytics on it and not a lot of visitors.
Well, yourself.
But, But basically, I hijacked F1 help, right? Mm-hmm. From CSS. So if you ever hit F1 when your cursor is on a property, you actually
have you
go
told
to
anybody that you hijacked F1?
No, I don't think
that's
so.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so if I have CSS open, and I have Web Essentials. If I hit for help,
yes,
I will get your website.
Yes, but for a good reason though.
Oh, yeah,
because
not for Google Ads.
No, but it's why would you go to MSDN, which is what you normally go?
Right.
Why would you go to MSDN to learn about CSS?
Yeah.
It is not the natural place. So what I did actually was I didn't just put people on Real World Validator for the fun of it. It's actually because you can see in there very clearly what browser supports what, with link to the specification, with link to the modules, all sorts of metadata
around
that.
Is that kind of like caniuse.com?
Yes, very much indeed.
Interesting. Yep. Okay. And where are you getting that information from?
Well, that was manually gathered. That
really?
Was
so you just went
effort.
And figured it out?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. We went to caniuse.com and other places to kind of see all these things. Mm-hmm. But then it turned out that all these different sites actually disagree on a lot of things.
How did you figure out the result, like the final word?
Well, we tried it.
Oh, so, just to see.
Yeah. So, of course, we have contacts over at the IE team, so they helped out
so you did
on
cheat.
The IE thing.
Uh-huh. And,
well, no, we needed that because we want to make sure that we have everything that all the browsers support. So mm-hmm. Bruce Lawson from Opera helped out with the Opera-specific stuff and all
cool.
that. So,
Which actually brings me to another thing, IntelliSense and the CSS editor. Tell me what's built in versus what's in Web Essentials, because I know now that I can type hyphen O or hyphen MS, and I can get browser-specific prefixes.
Yeah, that's built in.
That's built in. So out of the box, I get that in 2012. So
you get all the vendor specifics built in, and if you hit dash or hyphen first, and they all show up, that's all built in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I know that a lot of people, like, for example, Leah Veru from the W3C, has been encouraging people to do things prefix-free. Mm-hmm. And she might look at some aspects of a tool like Web Essentials and think that promotes a world full of vendor prefixes.
Yes.
What do you think about that? And are you thinking about changing it such that it encourages the user in a different direction.
Yeah, that is a very interesting thing because we do not want to encourage bad behavior, right? And we also want to move as browsers stabilize. We want to make sure that we're ahead, and we remove old vendor prefixes that are no longer used. And I got some emails, actually I got a lot of tweets as well, from people that all of a sudden was wondering, why do I not have any dash MOS dash border radius and dash WebKit border radius anymore? Mm-hmm. And that's basically because we updated the schema files. Mm-hmm. And Web Essentials goes out and checks for them, and they were no longer needed.
So it keeps itself up to date.
So it actually removes the vendor specifics that are no longer needed. And I think the rule I had back when I did that was, if it's not supported, if the standard property is supported in Firefox 4, then I'm just going to remove the Mozilla version. And then I had the same kind of version.
So you have a cutoff point.
I had a cutoff point for each of the browsers, basically.
Okay. So then let me ask you this. If I already have a CSS file that's using these, do you have a sweep function that will go and tie, you know, you're wincing because you know you need it, yeah. that will go through and basically check disk?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, where's my CSS lint?
Yeah. No, it does not do that. It does it the other opposite way.
Mm-hmm.
It does it, if you're missing any, it will tell you, but it will tell you if you have a vendor specific that no longer exists. It will simply just say, this does not exist.
I see.
But you have to delete it manually.
Okay. Yeah. Now, one of the other things that you do is you augment in Web Essentials features that aren't necessarily features that you work on. So for example, yes. Howard and the team that works on, bundling and optimization, they do their bundling and optimization, if I understand correctly, because they're on our team.
Yes.
I hope I better understand correctly. Mostly at runtime.
Yes.
Right. You know, you put together bundles. Yep. But you have this cool feature, well, actually two, that take the idea of runtime minification and bundling of CSS, and you have, like, open a CSS file, hit Control S,
yes.
very natural gesture, and then a .min shows up next to it.
Yes.
Which is save time.
Yes.
And then you've got this idea of a bundle file that's like a little XML file that says these are a bundle, and then you will hook into that.
Yeah.
And I could even put it into build time. So they've got a lot of different choices about when I could do that.
Well, actually, there is no build time for either bundling or minification in Web Essentials. There are no MS build hooks at all.
No.
But for bundling and minification, actually, the official Nougat, or sorry, the Howard's team that does the system
right,
the web optimization,
Microsoft
they're actually coming
one.
Out. Yeah, they're coming out with the bundling and minification MS build time.
Oh, so they are. Okay, so that's how. Sorry, I misunderstood. Yeah. So they will have runtime and build on the web on the official side, rather.
Yes.
Pardon me. And then we'll have save time.
Yes.
Now, could the save time mess up? Like, could you fight with their feature?
No, not really, because they're all runtime. So they will take whatever CSS file you have registered with the runtime component. Mm-hmm. And whether or not that CSS file comes from, you know, it has been generated through a bundling mechanism in Web Essentials or not, that doesn't really matter.
Well, what's the value then of Web Essentials saving a minified version on when I hit save? If I choose not to use...
Yeah, it's a personal bundling. Choice, I think.
I see. So if I choose not to use runtime bundling, it might just be there waiting for me, ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, I like runtime bundling for a lot of things. And then for some things, I don't actually like it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, they like to serve all their static files statically.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
So they just want the files
because you understand
on
what's happening and you know.
Yeah.
So let's say, though, that I'm starting to realize that this is a lot of work. And you are all by yourself putting together a crap load of work. And what happens if you get hit by a truck and Web Essentials is just going to sit there on your hard drive and we'll never know?
Well,
what happened?
Well, that was a real problem until last Friday when I open sourced the whole thing.
Ah.
So now it's actually out in the wild. It's on GitHub.
So it's on GitHub and I could add a new module or do something cool with it.
Yeah. I hope you will. I hope you will. I'm really eager to see what people will come up with because there's been a lot of interest in helping out from the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't really been possible before, but now we finally figured out how to open source it and in a good way. And now it is. So hopefully we're going to see a way bigger momentum coming going forward here.
Now, you said that in 2012, we updated the CSS editor so it would be very flexible and got a great new API for extensibility, which made all of the cool stuff you did possible.
Yes.
Now in 2013, we are doing the exact same thing to the HTML editor.
Yes.
What crazy stuff might I now want to do? in Web Essentials. And is that hooked up so that someone could go and see the hooks that are ready?
Oh, yes.
Ready and waiting for crazy stuff.
There is already stuff in there. So I've already added smart tags. So if you want to add smart tags that are... So a smart tag, you know, from C Sharp, it's that little thing that shows up whenever you implement an interface, for instance. It shows up a little glyph, like a little...
A little context menu
on the actual item itself. Mm-hmm. So in this case, that item could be an attribute. It could be an HTML element.
Okay.
And you can invoke that. Control comma will open it up. And you can basically do whatever you want. And because you have...
Control comma or control dot?
Oh, sorry. Control dot. Yeah, okay. Sorry. Two different features. But anyway, since you have full access to the tree, mm-hmm. the HTML tree or DOM tree or whatever you want to call it, you can manipulate all you want. So we ship... out of the box, we have features that will automatically add a height and a width attribute to mm-hmm. an image, or Base64 encode it. And I've added other stuff that will convert an image to a figure, an HTML5 figure tag.
I wonder if I could do something cool with SVG and Illustrator files or come up with some way to do that.
Oh, yeah. Like now when you, something that we couldn't do before that seems very basic is when you have an image tag. Mm-hmm. And you point to an image somewhere.
Right, which I do all the time, right? You want to just take a foo.png and drag it in and go image source equals.
Yeah. And then now when you take your cursor over it, we can actually show a little preview of that image, just as we could in CSS.
Inline
in CSS. It's just like a hover tooltip.
Well, what other metadata might be inside of that image file that I might want to then bring in?
That's exactly. You can do whatever you want.
Height and width.
Height and width is what we're already doing with the smart tag. To insert that. But you can extract all sorts of stuff. And even if it's like a remote resource, you can go download that and do all mm-hmm. sorts of analytics on it. For instance, if you have a script block or a style block, you can now say export to its own file. Like add a smart tag for that. You can kind of clean up. You can do a lot of refactorings. All those things become possible because we changed the HTML editor. We updated it to this new version.
What about a Twitter Bootstrap specific thing so that I could say button and then see what are the choices of different button styles and then a preview of what the button might look like as I'm doing it? Huh?
That would be actually not that hard.
See, that's what I like hearing. It would not be that hard.
Yeah,
it's cool. Yeah. Okay, so the second thing that you're doing, and I got to show this a little bit and you can see it on the keynote if you go to channel9.msdn.com, is this thing called Browser Link. Now, I like codename Artery.
Yes.
But somebody pointed out that arteries only flow blood in one direction.
Yeah.
And this is a dual directional link between the browser and Visual Studio.
Yes, it's a bidirectional communication channel, all implemented in open standards, WebSockets, JavaScript, HTML.
So you have a web server
inside
a Visual Studio editor.
Yes.
Is it in the editor or where does it
live? It's somewhere within the Visual Studio process. It's a self-hosted SignalR HTTP listener.
SignalR being the real-time framework that we're using in ASP.NET.
Yeah. So it's basically like the way that we host WebSockets. And because it's based on SignalR, mm-hmm. it means that we support all the browsers that SignalR supports. Even browsers that do not support WebSockets, we will then fall back through SignalR to long polling.
But then SignalR supports pretty much anything. I mean, Opera Mini or whatever, they support all that stuff.
Everything, yep.
Okay, so wait a second. So now in the keynote, I showed dual or bidirectional communication between Visual Studio, IE, and Chrome. Can I maybe hook it up to an iPhone someday?
Yes, you can. So I actually demoed how to use the iPhone emulator, mm-hmm. and there's absolutely no problem. It hooks up with WebSockets. It just works. So it doesn't really matter what browser you've got.
What about a device? How would I hook that up to a device?
Yeah, so we've done some investigation on hooking up to a device because that's the cool demo, right?
Because it's not necessarily on localhost, but it might be somewhere else. Or I might want to do a localhost tunnel of some kind.
Yeah, so the problem is firewalling, right? If you want to connect from, let's say you have your Windows phone and you want to type in your you know, you have a workstation and now from your Windows phone, you want to type in the server name.
Well, but they're on the same network. I should be able to make it so I could get IIS Express, the development version of IIS, outside and available and hooked up on port anything quickly.
So there's nothing that prohibits us of doing that. What the problem is right now, or no, not the problem, the challenge is how do we do that in a very, very easy way? Because right now you actually have to open up firewall ports and everything to make that communication possible. And that's the challenge.
Right.
So it's not because it's impossible. It's just very difficult right now.
And it doesn't have anything to do with with browser link slash artery. In this case, I just have to figure out, I mean, you can do it now, probably.
Yeah.
I would, the idea is we're not using IIS in this case. We're using IIS Express. So it needs to be answering with your browser's, with your computer's host name on a certain port, firewall open.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Using IIS, I suppose I could do this today, couldn't I?
Yeah, but you're still going to run into that firewall issue.
Oh, to talk WebSockets into Visual Studio itself.
From a remote device, right? So you still have the same, no, not the WebSocket, just accessing the actual website. If you can see the website, then we can also have browser link hook it up. But getting from your phone and actually seeing your IIS site on your server is problematic.
But that could be like, what is it called? Adobe Shadow?
Yes.
It could be like that, where I have all these devices sitting on my desk.
Yep. We actually had a prototype running of a Windows 8 app that was opening a UDP channel that would actually do that.
Wow.
So you could kind of go around any firewall issues and all that stuff. But that didn't seem to be the right approach. But that was just a prototype. But the fact is, where we are right now is that we're actually limiting, the request has to be local. So right now, until we figure this out, we're actually, for security reasons, we're actually limiting it to be only the same developer machine can access it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Interesting. The thing that it's implemented first, and the one that people can see and use and play with today and explore, is the idea of this browser refresh.
Yes.
So I can hit Control Alt Enter, or I can hit the button, and I can take, is there some limit? N number of browsers?
There is no limit.
So lots of browsers, you know, someone in development might have 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And then hit refresh. Mm. But that's more of a, and I'm not trying to disparage your work, but it's almost like just a proof of concept. Like you've shipped a proof of concept from a feature perspective. What's interesting isn't that feature live refresh or auto reload. What's interesting is the underlayment, the communication framework is solid.
Yep.
SignalR is proven.
Yep.
So now it's like Web Essentials. You've got the hooks in.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's what kind of crazy thing could you think up?
Yep.
I was thinking about what if I made it so I was filling out a form and I was typing in one browser and then it typed at the same time in all the other browsers.
Yeah, yeah.
Would that be weird? I mean, that seems like a great idea.
That would be weird, but it's really cool and that's what I built, right? So
did you have that too?
Yeah.
You're lying.
No.
You're kidding.
You didn't see that?
No.
Okay.
I just made that up.
Really?
I'm totally serious. I swear to God, I just had that idea.
Okay, well.
When did you do that?
Don't watch the Channel 9 video.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Very cool. So you're going to, oh, wow. All right. So then did you build that? What is it, an extension of some kind?
That's an extension. That took me, I'll guess, maybe 8 minutes to write that.
What happens if it gets out of sync? I guess it really can't because you're going on a name value pair basis, huh?
Why would it get out of sync?
I don't know. Maybe you type too fast and one browser has different behavior than another.
Yeah, yeah. So you need to see the talk because I actually show off something that's really funny as well. And cool. I'm not sure how useful it is, but that's the whole point.
Well, that's the whole point.
Right?
It's an experiment. Like, let's have a lab.
I have one. Let's say that you have two browsers open and you're on the same URL.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say one of the browsers, you now scroll down to the bottom of the page because that's the part that you're now working on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what if you want all your other browsers to kind of scroll down to that same location? I've implemented, so if you hit Control Alt Enter in your browser, all the other browsers will align to that. So if they're on the same URL, they will scroll to the same position. But if they're on a different URL, they will navigate to the right URL. So you can kind of sync up your browsers. And basically what it is, it's a browser to browser communication where they just relay that communication over the browser link.
I see. But if you open up a new URL,
that
next URL has to reattach that connection.
Every time there's a refresh going on, they reconnect. Yes, but that's really fast. That's not something you're going to notice.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So right now we are working on how to do live CSS update. So the one I showed was every time you save the CSS file, all the browsers just refresh the CSS files,
not
the whole page. So it's instant.
How do you do that? You'd have to basically go and run like a reset and then reapply them all.
Yeah, it's actually very, very simple. I'll show you the code. It's probably 10 lines of JavaScript altogether. But basically, I just run through all the linked style sheets and basically just attach a random number to the query string.
Oh,
that makes the browser reload them.
Okay, let me ask you this then, and this is a more controversial question. In a world where a lot of developers are doing Chrome and DevTools and Sublime, what's the point of a big fat quote unquote IDE like Visual Studio? You know, you've got things like Project Meteor and all these different things. You know,
for me, it's about productivity. It's about that I'm in one tool And the more I can stay there and be productive, the better. What I really don't like is that I have to go search for stuff online, and I have to use console apps, and I have to use all sort of command line tools and just different tools in general to do the stuff that I have to do every day.
Mm-hmm.
And all that context switching for me is like really problematic, and it gets me out of the zone. You know, as a developer, we get in the zone. I want to stay there as long as possible. And I can do that if I can get all friction away, and if I can minimize all the time that my environment kind of gets in the way.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to get the details right. We want to get the IDE out of the way. And actually, we want to be a little bit better than that, because we want something that's called a thinking IDE, if you're going to think of that.
A thinking IDE.
The thinking IDE. How can we get the IDE to be knowing what your next move is going to be,
mm-hmm.
and then present it to you as you need it?
What about a way that, I mean, I'm always changing CSS in DevTools in Chrome. When I get it right, I want to push it back down into my IDE and into the N number of CSS files. You know what I mean? So I change a rule. I could go and update that rule using Chrome as the authoritative source.
Yes.
That would be cool.
That would be really cool. And we're actually looking into doing that. We know how to do that.
That's cool.
We have the technology to do that.
We have the through technology.
Through BrowserLink. We know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just a matter of actually doing it. But we need to get the infrastructure done first and all those things. So
okay.
it's something that we're going to look at, because what we really want is that people should use the workflow that they want.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If they want to use Chrome DevTools to do all their pixel pushing, they should do that. And we should just have the option of giving them the save button in Chrome,
mm-hmm.
or in Firebug or IE or, you know, wherever they're comfortable.
Yeah.
And have that saved back. And we do know how to do all those steps.
Hmm.
It's just a matter of actually getting it done. So you can expect something like that to be coming down the line.
And people can see, okay, so people can go to GitHub on your personal GitHub to see your Web Essentials stuff.
Yes.
And get involved.
Uh-huh.
And they can go to Channel 9 and Build, and they can see your talk that you did at Build, which apparently I saw in my dreams, because I swear I totally had that idea and you've already built it. That's crazy.
That is
when I have an idea and you've already built it. As I have the idea,
yep.
That makes me feel a little creepy.
Yeah, I built it last week.
You built it last week, too?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, thanks so much for talking to me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.